Are you ready for an expedition? Well, welcome to the Home Base Travel Agent Show, and we are going to take you on an expedition to Antarctica. So welcome aboard and get ready to go, because this is show number 400. This is show 400 of the Home Base Travel Agent Show, and I'm Barry Kantz, your host, and I really want to thank you for listening and stopping by to check out all of our content, which is available on the website at hometravelagent.net. And the content goes back several years, almost to 2005 at least. And if you do a web search, or Google search, I should say, you'll find content that will go right back to show number one, if you're interested. So, if you want to reach me, you can send me an email at Barry, B-A-R-R-Y, at hometravelagent.net, and we love to hear from you. Send us your comments, suggestions for show topics, or just about anything that you'd like to send us, please pass it along, and we're happy to get your emails. Also, you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/HBTAS, the initials for the Home Base Travel Agent Show, and we welcome you to come over there and give us a like and see what our Facebook page is all about. We do post content on the Facebook page, so check that out as well. Well, we hope you enjoy this edition of the Home Base Travel Agent Show, the 400th edition. The show is jam-packed with information about a tour, well, actually an expedition to the Falkland Islands, the South Georgia Islands, and the Antarctic Peninsula. And I think you're really going to enjoy this. So I am going to jump right into the lecture. That's what you'll get when you go on these expeditions. You'll get, I wouldn't call them lectures, but you'll get information about all the things that you see. So it's really a learning expedition. But as I digress here, I want to go back and say that we're going to jump right into this content and let you hear it for yourself. So here we go. Well, welcome everybody. We are interviewing a guest who is excited about a trip that she just took, and we're going to hear all about it. In fact, it's an amazing trip, and I think after you listen to what she has to tell you, I think you'll be excited about passing this information along to your clients, and hopefully you can book people on this trip, because it sounds like a wonderful experience. But before we get into that, I want to give a shout out to Lorraine. She is not with us today. She's in Windsor, California, doing some great things for the Windsor Chamber of Commerce. So she had a conflict today, so we will get her back here next month. But in the meantime, I want to introduce Rebecca Stacy from Zegram Expeditions. And Rebecca was with us before, 2 or 3 months ago, not sure how long ago, but I'm excited to have her back and tell us about her experience that she just got back from just a few days. So take it over, Rebecca. Tell us a little bit about yourself and what happened.
Well, thank you so much, Barry. And Lorraine, we are definitely missing you, but I know that you're out there making moves and helping things out with the chamber. So, my name's Rebecca Stacy. I am the business development manager for the Western United States and Canada for Zegram Expeditions. When I last spoke and was interviewed, which, oh man, it feels like it was only a few months ago, maybe it was about 4 or 5, I was pretty new to expedition travel in Zegram and international expeditions, really excited about the future of expedition travel and belonging to such wonderful companies that have nearly 60 years combined experience in expedition travel and eco travel. And I was very, very, very incredibly fortunate to, as Barry said, basically get back a week ago from experiencing my first expedition. And that was with Zegram to Antarctica, South Georgia, and the Falkland Islands. So before I dive too deep into the day-to-day life, the different destinations we visited, I just wanted to briefly talk a little bit about Zegram Expeditions. We are a company that was founded by six friends and explorers up in the Seattle Pacific Northwest area. They wanted to really do travel their way. And so they created a company, and here we are today. So we have had a lot of legacy and history when it comes to adventure travel and expedition travel, and being able to see it firsthand on the ship in this amazing destination was just so exciting to me. And I'm sure you could kind of still hear the excitement in my voice. It's been a little bit of a crash coming back home from spending the last 3 weeks in this amazing destination with a great group of people. But I'm really happy to share with you guys my experience. So one thing I want to talk about right off the bat is with Zagram Expeditions, we do not own any of our ships. We do full charters on them, however. So it's only our people. And we put, of course, on this trip, we had about 12 field staff aboard, and they're experts and geologists and ornithologists and our expedition leaders and our cruise directors, and I'll kind of talk about how they made the trip so much more special as I go along. But the ship that we used on this trip was the Island Sky. It fit 100 passengers, so it really was the perfect size to go to a destination like this. And, you know, when I say the perfect size is when you're going somewhere like Antarctica, like South Georgia, some of the places and the landings that we did, you really, I mean, there was one place where the platform only held 12 people. And so you want to see these nesting albatross and the rockhopper penguins and everything, but you really need to do this in a small group experience. Also, unlike some other ways that you can travel to Antarctica, by going by small ship, you're able to do a lot of landings. We sort of call it boots on the ground. So we do everything pretty much with the exception of, I want to say there was maybe two stops, was all wet landings. So you're going in and out of Zodiacs, and you're kind of jumping in the water, and you're walking up the beaches or the rocky area in order to get to your destination. So being on a small ship made the experience so great. And it also allowed you to sort of get to know everybody. I mean, a few days into it, you pretty much knew everybody on the ship by their first names. Everybody kind of knew you. And it was a really great experience in terms of just being around the guests and having the ability to hang out with them and get to know them better, and not feeling like you're on this huge ship with tons of people and you're not getting your chance to really experience your time in these destinations that you're going to. Zagram Expeditions, all of our trips are all-inclusive. And what I mean by all-inclusive is, for instance, on this trip, you know, you're doing sometimes up to 3 activities a day. And that was one of those things that kind of surprised me, is just knowing, I knew that there'd be Zodiac cruises and landings, and, you know, you look at the itineraries and you know that you have to be a little bit flexible because it's all expedition travel. But, you know, when it said Salisbury Plain or El Sahul Bay, you know, or Gold Harbor, in my head, that still kind of translated to, okay, well, on, you know, day 7, we'll make one stop in El Sahul Bay and we'll go out there, do our thing, see some penguins, enjoy the scenery, and then we get back on the ship and then we're off to somewhere else for the next day. That is definitely not the case, at least not with Zagram. So we're going out sometimes 2-3 times a day, you know, sunrise landings, afternoon landings, evening sunset, Zodiac cruises. So all of that is included in your price, everything that we're doing. Your meals are all included. There is wine, beer, and soft drinks included for lunch and dinner. And one thing that, you know, if anyone knows me that's listening to this, I always say, because some of the questions I get asked about just the shipboard experience and inclusiveness is, you know, oh, well, why don't you include, you know, complimentary alcohol then at night or in the club area or something like that? And you don't need it. I will say my bar bill came out to be $30 at the end of that 3-week trip. This is not a trip where you're up drinking every night or anything like that. So it really shouldn't deter anyone about that, but it is a question that comes up a little bit. So all of your meals are included, and unlike normal ship trips, which a lot of people tend to feel like, oh, you know, I'm on a ship, so they want to automatically compare it to a cruise ship that they've done in the past or a river cruise or something like that. And really, the ship is your means of getting to these destinations. It's not, you know, there's fabulous lectures that I'll go into a little bit more, but it's not like you're waiting for bingo to start. You're not trying to, you know, make sure you plan for the white party that's going to happen in the 70s party or anything like that. So the ship itself, it's a small expeditionary ship. Our rooms, really nice rooms. I mean, I was on the bottom deck, two porthole windows. Actually, now that I think about it, four porthole windows, and over 200 square feet. But there is a lounge for lectures. There's a little club area. You go out on the Lido deck. You can do, there's a full deck to walk around and everything. But keep in mind, as I'm explaining this experience, it's definitely not a cruise. You just so happen to be on a ship to take you to these destinations. And I think that's also a little bit about what expedition travel is. One thing, too, about what Zagram does and what we do in general is, when I say the word expedition travel or adventure travel, a lot of times it scares people away. I mean, they're thinking, okay, how many miles do I have to hike every day? Am I going to have to carry a 30-pound backpack? What type of fitness do I have to be in? And while there are wet landings, you have to get in and out of zodiacs, you know, if you have to take into certain considerations your limitations. However, the best way I can describe expedition travel now is it's about the mentality of the traveler, of the guest. It is about not just making sure you're going into these pristine destinations, but making sure that you're leaving nothing behind and embracing the destination. It's really learning about where you're going and absorbing what makes it special, what makes it unique. And it's about the attitude of the traveler and how they approach the destination where they're going. Everyone that I came into contact with, all of our guests, they're curious travelers. They're very well traveled. Some of them have never and will probably never step foot on a cruise ship, on a general, you know, mass market or even a luxury niche type of, you know, Western European style cruise that so many other guests and travel professionals are very comfortable selling. I mean, the people that I met, some of them, you know, have done every style travel. Some of them only do adventure style travel. But the one thing in common, and it was in common with every single person I talked to, were they were the types of travelers that are hungry for knowledge. They're the lifelong learners. They're the ones that really immerse themselves in the destination and are excited to be there and to do a 5-mile hike with a geologist on atop one of the areas where West Point Island, for instance, was one of the areas where we did a hike. And, you know, it's, there's something special about going on a hike with a geologist who, you know, is not only renowned in his field and has worked as a curator at a museum, but he's also just casually pointing out, oh yeah, and this 100-million-year-old rocks over here and these fossils. And, you know, they're talking about the terrain and how it's changed. And it really elevates the experience in every way, shape, and form. So this is the type of expedition experience that Zagram offers and that I was very, very, very fortunate to be a part of. A couple of just really great highlights about my trip. So like I mentioned, I spent pretty much 3 weeks doing this trip. So it started in Ushuaia, and you go to the Falkland Islands, South Georgia, and the Antarctic Peninsula, and then you're crossing the Drake for a couple of days to go back to Ushuaia. And one of the things, and you will probably... it's going to be a little hard to believe because I am so sold on this experience. I had the most magical time. It moved me, even though I have been around the world and I've visited different destinations, and I always feel like something is special about the types of travel that I do and the types of trips that I go on. But this trip really moved me in a way that no other trip has ever done in the 12 years I've been working in the travel industry. But I was a little nervous before I went, and I was a little apprehensive, and I kind of pushed it off. I pretty much walked into an REI about a week and a half before my travel date and was like, I grew up in Southern California and I live in Las Vegas. I have nothing cold. Here's my packing list. Like, can you help me buy whatever I need to go to Antarctica? So I went into it not as well prepared as I normally am when I read these destinations, and a little afraid. I am a city girl is how I would describe myself. I, you know, thought my 45 minutes at the gym and stair-stepper and all that stuff is the extent of my activity. I'm not a big hiker. I'm not, you know, you normally don't see me outdoors on the weekend or camping or anything like that. So on top of that, sometimes I feel like I get motion sickness, even just staring at the ocean. So I was very, very nervous and apprehensive about this trip. I knew it'd be amazing. I know we have a great product. I know Zagram puts on an extremely well done itinerary. But for me, it just wasn't my number one pick if I could pick any trip with Zagram to go on. But I could not have been more naive, more wrong, but more excited to be wrong. I mean, I'm kind of happy that I was proven so wrong, to be quite honest. And just some of the things that made it so special to me, not only are you in these destinations that they're pristine, South Georgia has gone through incredible lengths to eradicate the issues with rats. And for instance, they had such a big problem with rats. I mean, they came down for, you know, years and years, far before our times, just with the trade and the exploration and the ships that went down there. But it obviously had a very negative impact on the environment. There's a bird called the South Georgia pipit, for instance, that our ornithologists with us, it was really exciting to see him so excited every time we saw this bird. And it's pretty much the one songbird down there that you can see. And, you know, you're going, okay, he's a birder. He's an ornithologist. Like, I've met some birders before. They get very excited. And then you're like, well, we've seen our third one this trip so far. And, you know, he's still very excited and people are kind of happy. And then at least I can, you know, point out which one is the South Georgia pipit. And then you talk to him a little bit more, and he talks about how out of all of his years of coming down here, you know, it wasn't until the last few years did they even see the South Georgia pipit regularly. I mean, it would be one of those animals or birds where we couldn't promise that you were going to see them 8-9 years ago because it was just so rare. And then you get to see the impact of what South Georgia has been able to do to eradicate, you know, these rats and to have the life that was there and was there far before we were grow back and bounce back. And it makes you, you know, I'm just smiling and thinking about it. And I could probably not tell you one bird from the other before I took this trip. Nobody would describe me as a birder. And just little moments like that is really what makes the trip and the expedition and the destination shine. And you can look up all these amazing photos of the Antarctic, of what Antarctica looks. I mean, the sheer white vastness of it all, and in South Georgia and the Falkland Islands and these different places. But when you're down there and you're getting to hear from these experts and you're being able to get excited about the things that you see, it is a completely different experience than anything that you can even see in a video or look at a picture. One of the other moments that really was special to me, I mean, not just, you know, spotting the South Georgia pipit, but it was, you know, I've always loved penguins. Everyone, you know, thinks penguins are super cute. I remember growing up and seeing March of the Penguins as one of my first animal documentaries and falling in love with it. But I didn't realize at the end of this trip, I was going to start having pretty strong opinions on what type of species of penguins I like the most. I mean, we saw, I want to say, 5 or 6 different types over the course of our trip. And, you know, you're going and you're seeing them by zodiac cruise, and you're going along in certain areas and you're watching them jump in the water, and you're seeing these penguins and in different geographical environments too. It's not just snow and then a couple of penguins on the snow, which is kind of what I thought going into it it was going to be like. It is, you're seeing them in rocky areas, you're seeing them on white sandy beaches of all things, which was one of the destinations, Grave Cove, that we went to. And you know, I didn't really think I was going to be hiking, and it's a very short hike, but basically walking over to a white sand bay to see these penguins. And then you start noticing the differences a little bit. You realize king penguins aren't as tall as you think they were originally by just looking at a picture. But then you also notice that they sound like their sounds is almost more of like a trumpet or something. And then you see the Gentoo penguins, which sound a little bit different. And you just, it just infects you with an excitement for the natural world, for what this world looks like when man takes a step back and allows nature to bounce back. And it really is something, though, that takes a lot of effort on our part, on the parts of the nonprofits that protect these areas, and the people that donate to help keep those areas protected. And in case you're wondering, my favorite penguin species at the very end of the day actually ended up being the Adelie penguins, which I always thought the rock hoppers and the macaronis, they have sort of the cute little hairdo things. But you start seeing the penguins and their personalities and all of this. And by the end, I was like, oh, I really like these Adelie penguins because they kind of march around with a little bit more purpose and they're extra chatty. And, you know, they're not trying to wait for their friends to catch up on what we call these penguin highways, which is, you know, roads that are not really roads, but paths that penguins take to get from their nesting sites to generally the ocean or one way or the other. So you sort of kind of see them wandering on, and you know, in so many different destinations and landings that we did, you sort of saw them get in and out of the water, you saw them take care of your young. The time of year that I went to, which was beginning of, or it was actually mid-January, I'm getting my dates all, end of January, sorry, to mid-February, a lot of the young were already a few months old, so you got to see the wildlife and you got to see them take care of their young, and you got to see a lot of babies that were starting to grow up and everything. And you know, you, I keep on coming back to the fact that you just get moved by the environment that you're in and by your surroundings and what you see. And especially if you're somebody like me and it's completely out of what you normally do or even think that you want to do. It just is such a great experience. And then of course, I don't even think I started talking about the actual peninsula yet. And that's sort of one of the other reasons why I really wanted to talk to you, Barry, and kind of get the word out is, you know, there's a lot of trips and a lot of people go to just the Antarctic Peninsula, or they do kind of what I call a drive-by trip or cruises where, you know, you're going down to the area, you're cruising around a bit, and these are on much larger ships, so they actually don't have the ability and the logistical ability to do landings on zodiacs. But you see the icebergs and, you know, you see the areas, but even just doing that or something where it's a 12, 13 day trip and you do get some boots on the ground on the peninsula, a couple landings in, you're really selling yourself short if you're not including the Falkland Islands in South Georgia. And there was a couple of people even on my trip that they had done just the Antarctic Peninsula before in the past, and they came back because they knew that they wanted to do the Falkland Islands in South Georgia. And I think a misconception that some people have is when, especially when it comes to penguins, you're going to see penguins in, on the peninsula when you do landings. But when you want that David Attenborough, like, wow moment where it's just a sea of nothing but penguins in front of you, you need to go to South Georgia, because that is really where you get that type of experience. And, you know, we visited Grytviken, for instance, which is an old whaling station. It is, and then you just learn about, you know, how life was back then, what whaling and sealing did, how it quite frankly impacted the wildlife down there. And so it was really interesting. I mean, Stanley in the Falkland Islands was also a very interesting place to go. I mean, it's not just wildlife. You go down there for the wildlife, don't get me wrong. But there's so much history. We visited an Argentine research station as well. And Port Lockroy, which is now more of a museum, but it was a British research station at one point. So you get a sense of not just the wildlife, but you get a sense of sort of the culture, what happened down there, you know, how we used to rob the place of its resources is kind of how I took it away. I mean, maybe I'm being a little harsh on that, but it's you get to see a little bit of everything. If you're into environmental science, I mean, there's no greater place where you see the impact of things like climate change than down there. And when you travel with Zagram Expeditions, you're there with experts in their field, and naturalists and geologists and ornithologists and historians, and they're spending, you know, our times at seas putting together these amazing lectures. And then every night we're having these things like recaps where on paper, again, maybe I was a little naive, but I'm going, okay, a recap is, you know, they say, oh, this is what we did today. This is what we're doing tomorrow. Wake up at 6 a.m., you know, thank you, have a nice dinner. But these recaps were mini lectures. They helped you really understand what you just saw. Our field staff would talk about 5 or 10 minutes each. And, you know, next thing you know it, you're learning about celestial navigation, and you're learning about, you know, different small tidbits of information that you wouldn't really get in the form of a long lecture, because frankly, there just isn't a lot of time, even with the sea days considered. And it just, again, enhances the program so much more. And it makes you so excited to think about things that you just never even thought that you would think about. One thing that's really special about Zagram too, and that, you know, really impressed me, was not only did I want to sit in every lecture because I'm thirsty for knowledge, I'm in this destination that I realized I knew nothing about, but you look behind and you see the other field staff are sitting in on the lectures too. And the field staff that were on our trip, I mean, we're talking about people where even though Zagram goes once a year, these experts have 70 years plus of combined experience traveling down there. They're, if you add up the amount of trips that they took, it's somewhere between like a little bit less or around the 300 mark. I mean, these are people that have done a lot of things down in Antarctica, and they're traveling with us and our guests because they want to share that experience with the guests, and they eat it up because it is, there's no better way to travel. During dinners, everyone just kind of, all the field staff just sit with the guests. It's not something set up. There was no, you know, I feel very fortunate because not only did I get this amazing experience, but I also got to see behind the scenes and sort of logistically how things were working out. And not once was it like, okay, you know, the ornithologist and the historian, you guys make sure that you sit at table, whatever, with these guests, or make sure that you're around. No, they're around. They're around because they want to spend time with the guests, and they want to help impart their knowledge and their expertise and enhance the experience down there. It all kind of plays into just making sure the trip is one of the best trips that they've had, and making sure that they're walking away with a greater appreciation than what they thought they were even going to do going into it. It really is truly not only just a once in a lifetime experience. It's the way that I feel like everyone should be traveling everywhere they go. I mean, I didn't think that I needed an ornithologist to point out certain things to me when I was going on a hike, but, or when I'm you know, walking over to a nesting area. But turns out, like, it is one of the best ways to go to a nesting area is when you have your ornithologist next to you and you can ask him questions, or when you can, you know, there are some sea days, obviously, to get in between these different areas. The two biggest stretches are the Drake Passage and when you're crossing the Scotia Sea in between South Georgia and to get to the Antarctic Peninsula. But those days, again, no bingo, nothing like that. You almost need those for some rest days, and we still keep you on your toes. I mean, there are fantastic lectures by our field staff. And one thing that is definitely not on the itinerary, but what I learned and what was kind of, I almost don't want to say the word fun as I go into this, but you learn about biosecurity when you go to South Georgia. I mentioned the thing about the rat eradication and how South Georgia has gone to great lengths. Well, part of that is making sure it stays that way. And especially in these really, really pristine destinations like South Georgia, where people are coming, tourism is growing, but they want to make sure that we're doing whatever we can to protect the areas. There's certain processes in place. And I'm telling you, we had the two biosecurity parties where you're taking paper clips and you're running it down the bottom tread of your shoes after the landing to make sure there is no piece of biological matter that you can transfer from one place to the other. We were scraping Velcro and vacuuming bags and taking tweezers to backpacks to make sure that there's no seeds. And it's a very serious thing. I mean, it's very important to keep destinations like this free of, you know, transferring different things, and you see the importance of it. But, you know, this is one of the first years where they were very, very strict about it. And we made it fun. Like, there was music, our guests were getting into it. They realized the importance of making sure that we don't transfer things from one area to the other. And then all of a sudden we're in Grytviken in South Georgia, and we know we're definitely going to be getting checked there. And, you know, they come on board and they do a fabulous presentation on the history and the heritage and what they've been doing. And then it's like, okay, this is our big test time. And for instance, on my trip, we got a 98%, and it can do things if, you know, everyone isn't all in working to make sure that we're doing these things under the name of biosecurity and making sure that we're not only not disturbing the wildlife and not disturbing the areas, we're not leaving anything that's then going to be detrimental to it. And it's like everyone's excited, and it can delay things. And it has delayed other previous ships from being able to land well over an hour because you have to keep on going back. And it's, you know, when our biggest ding was a little bit of lint that was fortunately not biomatter on Velcro, you know, it sounds so small and it sounds like, you know, so unimportant that I just talked for the last 3 minutes about biosecurity, but it just goes to show you how serious these places are, how serious we take our role in protecting the environment, but how we also want to make sure that the guests aren't feeling like, oh my gosh, now I have to, you know, I didn't realize I was cleaning my shoes three times a day because we just did three different landings, and some of it there was, you know, quite a bit of penguin guano that we just left from or something like that. It goes to kind of just show me at least the overall experience and that we're trying to give the guests. And part of that also, especially with Antarctica, South Georgia, and the Falkland Islands, itineraries like this, like expedition travel, you can't make promises. You can't promise we're going to go to every single landing that we want to go. You can't promise you're going to see every type of penguin that you should be seeing. And we do everything that we can. We have, you know, all of that experience and logistical work to try to make things work, but sometimes it doesn't. And for instance, on this particular trip, you know, every single year, I think it's around June, all of the suppliers, everyone puts in, you know, I want to go here, I want to do these landings. It's sort of a lottery system, and you have this really great itinerary planned out. But you also don't know what the weather's going to be like, even sometimes a couple of days before we make a landing. So you have an great plan and a great itinerary, but you may have to throw it completely out the window by the time you're actually sailing. And it's really important to make sure that you have an expedition leader and you have field staff that are able to be flexible, that are able to be agile, that kind of know their way around these places. And that on top of that, they know how to coordinate with IATA, which is one of these nonprofits that help regulate Antarctic tourism. And it's one of those things that we are actually a founding member of. So we have, again, a lot of experience and a lot of love for Antarctica. But you're able, and I was able to see that sometimes behind the scenes, it was like, oh my gosh, there's a big storm coming in. There's wind. There's going to be swells that are way too high for anybody to get out of a Zodiac on. And then it was like, well, here's our plan B, C, D, and E, just in case. And our expedition leader is coordinating with the captain of the ship, who's also coordinating with IATA, who's coordinating with whoever might have tried to go down to a certain landing area, but then they couldn't for whatever reason, but we can squeeze in and do it and kind of take their spot, so to speak. And it's all of these behind the scenes things that no guest noticed. Nobody knew that we were like on plan D by the time recap happened. And we're telling people, you know, wake up calls at 6 a.m. and this is where we're going to do our first landing and everything like that. So it really takes an amazing team that probably gets very little sleep during their trip to put on a life-changing experience. But that is what I received and that's what I got. Just even being in the Zodiacs, one thing that was kind of really cool to see is, you know, I'd never been in a Zodiac before. I have seen them on TV. I was super, super nervous. And I wasn't the only one. I mean, when you're telling guests, and our average guest is 65 years old, that these are all pretty much wet landings. So you're stepping out on the Zodiac into water or into, you know, rocky area. It's a little unstable, and you have to, on top of that, get into a Zodiac, and people get a little nervous. And seeing them go from the first landing that we did, where everyone's like, okay, remember, like, you know, swing the feet towards the ocean, no matter if you're going in and out, and, you know, this is what I need to do. So you scoot up as far as you can. And then by the third or fourth Zodiac cruise, I mean, people are getting more confident about it. People are feeling very comfortable. And that's what another thing is really important. It's having great field staff that make you feel confident in exploring these areas. I have a Facebook page that everyone is more than welcome to friend me. It's my personal Facebook page. It's Rebecca Stacy, if you want to find me. But I posted a lot of the videos along the way. And, you know, I don't have a fancy camera. I mean, there's plenty of people out there that are amazing photographers that were on the trip. But I most of the time pulled out my iPhone, which is a 6S Plus. So it's not even anywhere near the newer ones with the newer capabilities. And, you know, you just go to the right and you sort of just hit play. And all of a sudden you're seeing penguins and you're hearing the penguins come out of the water. And you're seeing these, there's one video where you're seeing these four young male elephant seals sort of just spar with each other. And, you know, they're practicing for when they get older. And then it becomes a 2-month battle every hour to try to, you know, exert your dominance over a harem of female elephant seals. So, but it's happening, you know, 15 feet away from you. You can just feel it and you can see it. And those are the types of experiences that you get on these trips. And then even just landing in Antarctica, you know, and you're doing certain things on the peninsula. Everyone, of course, thinks of these beautiful, beautiful long stretches of just snow and glaciers. But there's also a couple of stops that we did. Coverville, for one of them, actually sparks in my head, but it's rocky. It looks nothing like what some of the other images and some of the other landings that we did looks like. I mean, there is jagged rocks that between the cooling and the ice glaciers then melting and different things. And I wish I was a geologist. Tom explained it so much better than I am right now. But you get these rocks and these jagged rock formations along with the penguins and along with, you know, a couple of curious fur seals that seem to be everywhere. And you see different areas that you wouldn't normally think about as being Antarctica. And going on a trip like this, it really opened up my eyes to Antarctica just isn't one image of vast white snow with a couple of penguins on the side. South Georgia, I didn't really know anything about it except for I knew that's where there's a ton of king penguins. In fact, it has, I want to say it's Salisbury Plain, possibly. Maybe it was St. Andrews. One of the places, I mean, has one of the largest penguin colonies in all of South Georgia that we visited. And that is where, like I said, you have your David Attenborough moment. I want to say St. Andrews Bay now. And you just see further than the eye can really grasp all of these penguins, and you hear them, and you do smell them as well. I mean, it's definitely wildlife in some of these areas, but it is just such a remarkable sight, and you just feel like you're in the middle of a documentary in every step that you take and every port that you take. I kept on, you know, I sounded like a little kid in complete wonder, I think, every single time I got off a Zodiac, because I was just like, wow. Like, wow, this is amazing. And then you're not quite sure how the next landing can be even better. And then all of a sudden, you're on the next landing, or you're on the next Zodiac cruise, or you're watching the sunset in Antarctica, and it lights up the sky in this pink, red, orangish color that then reflects off of the icebergs that then glow pink, and the little bergy bits and the little things of ice. And it really is just absolutely remarkable, and a trip like this.
You were there, did it get dark at night, or was the daylight pretty much 24 hours?
Yeah, it definitely got dark. I would say it tended to get dark somewhere between 9 and 10 p.m. and then it would become light anywhere between 4 to 5 a.m. And so we definitely got some dark.
You know, these dark sky parks fascinate me. So I'm thinking, I just wondered if you had an opportunity to observe the stars, you know, because I'm sure there's no background light there. So it should be spectacular.
It is a different type of dark where it is all black. I mean, there wasn't really a lot of opportunities to see the stars. I think some of that had to do with just sort of the weather, though. And fortunately for us, we tended to make sure and make adjustments where needed to be where essentially we're in between two storms most of the time. So we had pretty fantastic weather the entire time. There was, I would say, anywhere between, it was 35 to 40 degrees Fahrenheit most of the time. So we were very fortunate, and we even got some clear sunny days at that. I'm in Vegas right now, and it's actually been snowing off and on for the last week, and I probably had more snow now this week on my week back than I did on the entire trip.
Another thing I was curious about, most of the time you're stopping and probably anchoring offshore, but are there any towns or villages there that you stop at?
So you're correct. Most of the time we are anchoring offshore. The towns that we visited were Stanley, for instance, in the Falkland Islands. It was one of your typical port towns, and there was a great museum. You had a few hours to walk around. They have a whole variety of stores and different things, and that was in the Falkland Islands. The only other place, and I really kind of hesitate to even call it a town, it's almost like a museum stop, is in Grytviken, for instance. It was the old, it's an old whaling town, or whaling port area. So it's, you know, walking from one end to the other is really a 10-minute stroll. And the things that you see, I mean, of course, there is a small gift shop and stuff, but you get to see really just how things were in those days and what it was like to be somebody that was a whaler or sealer that was living down there. And that is also, Grytviken, if anybody knows anything about the life of the explorers that go down there, Scott and Amundsen, I think I'm pronouncing it wrong, and of course Shackleton, that is one of those areas where Shackleton is buried. So it is a pretty big stop to a lot of people, especially anybody that's into maritime and explorations and stuff. So that's sort of a townish. I mean, you can, they have a post office, so you can definitely send yourself a postcard. And then the last kind of townish area would be Port Lockroy. So that is sort of the southernmost town, so to speak, in on the Antarctic Peninsula, and you can go there and send a postcard. It can take about, you know, up to 3 months to get to you in the States. But yeah, it is, you know, you see like a historic building and a historic site and things like that. But again, it's also very small, you know, more than, I don't even think you could fit more than 100 people, to be quite honest, in that area.
So this is all fascinating, and travel advisors, you should be taking note here, because, you know, a lot of people want to experience something like this. And how would they get a hold of you, Rebecca, or how do they contact Zegram Expeditions and get signed up and start giving these clients of theirs some great experiences?
Yeah. Well, like I mentioned, I work strictly with travel professionals. So, I cover the West, which is very vague because it's 20 states of Western United States and Canada. And I have an East counterpart, but the best way to kind of get started to learn more is to just reach out to me. My email address, it is my first name, Rebecca, R-E-B-E-C-C-A, period, Stacey, S-T-A-C-E-Y, at THLNAS.com. That's my email address. You can also, like I mentioned, find me on Facebook. I'm Rebecca Stacey, and you'll probably figure out it's me because I have a whole bunch of Antarctica photos up there. Or you can contact Zegram directly, and you can do that. The best way is probably if you just go to the website and you can find our contact information. The website is zegram.com. It is not a real word, so don't feel bad if you've never heard that word before. Like I mentioned, we were founded by six friends, so it really is actually their names put together to create a word. And you spell that Z-E-G. R-A-H-M like Mary, and you can go to zegram.com.
Oh, great. And do you have programs for travel agents so that maybe something online or some way that they can learn about the different destinations that are available to clients?
Yes. So one thing that is a little bit, you know, not the best about our company is there's a lot of different things to remember and a lot of different websites to remember. But we do have a new travel agent portal, which we're launching. It's still in the works, but you can kind of sign up to learn more, and it does give some basic information. And you can find that the website is essentialexpeditioncollection.com, all spelled out. And you can learn more there. And you can kind of learn more about the different resources. And we can, of course, co-op or help with marketing and flyers and things like that as well. We also have, I want to mention, because this is sort of a little new for us, but we're starting to really ramp up our partnerships with travel professionals. And there are some FAM opportunities that do come down the line, as you can imagine, since we are a small ship and small overland capacity type of tour operator. It doesn't come up very often, but we do have some opportunities. So you want to make sure to reach out and make sure you're signed up, so you're on that list whenever we do have itineraries come out.
Yeah. And it's not just Antarctica. You go a lot of places.
Oh yeah. So, One of the things that's extremely unique about us and that really attracted me, because I was a travel advisor for about 4 years, but one of the things that I really liked about us is we go every single year to all 7 continents. So we'll do it either by land trips or we'll do it by ship trips, kind of like what I explained my trip with Antarctica was like. And on top of that, every year, almost all of our itineraries, we only do once and then we change it up the following year. So our portfolio of destinations that we go to and the itineraries we go to are constantly changing. And we do have a 70% repeat guest rate, which after going on that trip, I can totally see why people just keep on coming back with us and wanting to travel new places with us.
Well, that's great. And as we wrap up here, once again, Rebecca, I'm going to ask to give your email address and any way that the travel professional can contact you.
Yep. Once again, my email address, it is Rebecca, R-E-B-E-C-C-A, period Stacey, S-T-A-C-E-Y, at THLNAS.com. And then you can also just give me a call. As you can probably tell, I love chatting about this and I'm very passionate about what I do. And my number is 702-981-1431.
Well, great. And I'm excited. I'm ready to go to Antarctica. Actually, you know, I'm a little further south than where I normally live, but that's much further south and it sounds great. So,
yeah.
So anyway, if, you know, I have a hard time with this still, I keep saying travel agent, but you know, we got to call this travel advisors now. So, which is a good thing. And, but anyhow, if you want to reach me, you can email me, and we encourage you to do that, and maybe give us some ideas for shows and topics, and we're happy to hear from you about those items. And you can reach me at Barry, B-A-R-R-Y, at hometravelagent.net, and you can go over to Facebook and like our page there at facebook.com/HBTAS, and that's the initials for the Home-Based Travel Agent Show, and we still have agent in our name. It's hard, you know, after being around for 15 years with this show, it's a brand and it's hard to switch things around, but we do encourage people to use the advisor moniker. Well, this has been great, Rebecca, and it's just great to hear your excitement about your trip, and I really appreciate you coming back and telling us about that. And boy, when you take another trip, let us know.
Of course, I definitely will.
We'd love to hear.
Yeah, and I totally appreciate you guys, and congratulations again on just the longevity of your podcast. And it's always great to hear the updates every month.
Yeah, thanks. Okay, well, we will be around next month, and until then, and we'll say goodbye to Rebecca, and hope to have her back again, hopefully soon. We'll see where else in the world that she ends up. So. All right. Thanks, Rebecca.
Thank you, Barry.
Well, Rebecca, thank you once again for being a guest on our show. And you're always a welcome guest. Always very interesting topics that you cover with your experiences at Zegram Expeditions Travel. So I want to thank you and hope to have you back after your next expedition. And I look forward to that. And I look forward to coming back to you next month with show number 401, where Laureen will likely join us if she's not tied up with the Windsor Chamber of Commerce doing all those good things for the town of Windsor in California. So until then, I want to wish you all safe travels and stay healthy, everyone. See you next month. Bye-bye for now.